Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a Vision for You Big Book study. My name is Tina S. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May the 14th, 2026. Today we're reading from the Big Book and we are on page 37 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, reading from the fourth paragraph, starting with Our Behavior is as Absurd and Incomprehensible, reading through one paragraph, ending with But in a few weeks, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. Today's readers are readers of the text, Zoe N., page 164, Maura Z., and our backup is Julie G., 12 Steps, Vasa O., 12 Traditions, Letty G., our newcomer greeter, Karen W., and our second hour host is Colleen M. The reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May 13th, 2026 is the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,453. That's 23453. 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,454. That's 23454. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Our primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Vasa O to read the 12 steps. Vasa, please read.
Thank you, Tina, and good morning, everyone. I'm Vasa O, calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. Here are the 12 steps. Number one, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. Two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Three, made a decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood Him. Four, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Five, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. Six, we were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. Seven, humbly asked Him to remove our shortcomings. Eight, made a list of all persons we harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. 9. We may direct amends to such people whenever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10. Continue to take personal inventory and, when we're wrong, promptly admitted it. 11. Sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood Him, praying only for knowledge of His will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs.
Thanks so much, Vasa O. And now I'll ask Letty G. to read the 12 traditions. Please read, Letty.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Letty G. from California. These are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1. Our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2. For our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God, as He may express Himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3. The only requirement for OA membership is the desire to stop eating compulsively. 4. Each group should be autonomous, except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5. Each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6. As an OA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA, as such, ought never be organized, but we may create service boards or committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Letty G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today, we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 37 in the chapter more about alcoholism on the fourth paragraph, starting with our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible. And I will now ask Zoe N. to please read for us. Please start us off, Zoe.
Good morning, Zoe N., compulsive overeater from New Mexico. Our behavior is as absurd and incomprehensible with respect to the first drink as that of an individual with a passion, say, for jaywalking. He gets a thrill out of skipping in front of fast-moving vehicles. He enjoys himself for a few years in spite of friendly warnings. Up to this point, you would label him as a foolish chap having queer ideas of fun. Luck then deserts him, and he is slightly injured several times in succession. You would expect him, if he were normal, to cut it out. Presently, he is hit again, and this time has a fractured skull. Within a week after leaving the hospital, a fast-moving trolley car breaks his arm. He tells you he has decided to stop jaywalking for good, but in a few weeks, he breaks both legs. So, behavior that is absurd and incomprehensible, eating and eating, binging and purging, constantly thinking about eating, constantly thinking about how not to eat. Those are absurd behaviors and patterns. And inevitably, I would eat. And the eating would be at times filled with this sense of excitement. But false promises that this time I'll feel better, I'll do better. But always the pull to the food was so intense, it didn't matter what I told myself, the food would win over and over many years. And even with some recovery, There were instances that were followed by even more demoralizing relapse, back into a binge, a purge cycle. I would go on a diet. I'd tell myself other things, this time will be different. Or I'd get jazzed about a new workout or going vegan or keto or fasting and et cetera, et cetera. But it never lasted long. So how do I relate to the jaywalker? I hurt myself with food, by overeating, by binging, thinking constantly about food, vomiting, and feeling horrible about myself, but unable to stop the things. You know, I'd walk back into the road again with the thoughts barreling down on me. Oh, no, this, you know, here comes this truck pounding me into the darkness in my mind. And also having all of these adverse physical consequences. Every time I eat this or that, I would find myself back into oncoming traffic, unable to get to safety, until I found myself surrendered, working the steps on the crosswalk where something outside of myself stops the insanity. However, I must remain surrendered. I know this. I know that I've lost my legs and they will never grow back. So I will always have the mind and the body of a jaywalker. And the solution is working the steps. And with that I pass. Thanks for letting me share and serve.
Thanks so much, Zoe, and for getting us started. And then we're going to take a list of names. And before we get started, although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you share it on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back. And if you give me your first name with the first initial of your last name and where you're calling from, I can take some names. Who would like to share?
Melissa Singh, North Carolina.
Melissa and Shanna.
Janice P.
Janice, somebody P or B?
Elizabeth D.
Elizabeth D.
Vasa
O.
Vasa.
Thank
Everybody's
you.
Talking on
Robin.
Top of each other. I got Melissa,
Robin.
Shanna, Janice, Elizabeth, and Vasa. And if you've given me your name, the first time around, please say it if I didn't hear it. Got Robin.
Anne M., North Carolina.
Anne M.
Ken W. H.
Who else? Ken W. H. Got Melissa, Shanna, Janice, Elizabeth, Vasa, Robin, Anne, and Ken W. H. Who else gave their name and I didn't hear it?
Heather K.
Nick in Philippines.
Heather K. and Nick. Okay, let's go with that. Who is that? Okay, we'll go with Melissa, Shanna, Janice, Elizabeth, Vasa, Robin, Ann, Ken, Heather, and Nick. Sounds like a great lineup. Okay, Melissa C., please get us started here.
Yeah, hi. Thanks, Tina, so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, you know, when I read this, I think, okay, what is the thing that's, like, incomprehensible and absurd is not necessarily what happens, right? Once I take that bite, like, that's the phenomenon. That's the allergy. That's the thing that the allergic response, that's not what's absurd and crazy. What's absurd and crazy is knowing, having full knowledge of my disease, knowing exactly what's going to happen, and on, you know, in a period of abstinence, having abstinence, taking that first bite. That's the crazy thing, you know, because if you've been, for me, my experience with this disease was some of the times I was taking it thinking, okay, this is just going to be fun, you know, if I was casually eating with friends. But having had years of this disease and having had intermittent periods of abstinence, I knew exactly where it was going to go once I ate. And the crazy and absurd thing was that I would do it anyway, that I had this mind that in certain moments would just twist and turn. And I was, you know, I was talking to someone yesterday and I was recalling a time, you know, in abstinence where I had been, you know, working a program. I had some abstinence. I had not, you know, enlarged and perfected my spiritual life. I mean, that is the truth. I was in the process, but not really taking it seriously. And I remember, like, there was this, it was going to snow. And I got this idea in my head that I had to get my binge foods. I knew I was going to be snowed in with it. I knew exactly what was going to happen. You know, it wasn't that I was, I don't know that I even thought it was going to be fun. I just knew that I had this need and there was nothing that anybody could have said. I even remember telling my sponsor, I'm going to eat. Like, there was nothing you could do about it. And in those moments, what I think has always happened for me is that I no longer care. Like, I don't care how bad it's going to get in those moments. That's the thing that makes no sense, that when you have everything to live for and that in your own hands you're going to tear yourself down because the desire for the food is so much greater, and the only thing that removed that is a relationship with my Creator. That is it, an entire abstinence. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Melissa C. from New York. Next, we have Shanna C., followed by Janice P.M. Please share, Shanna.
Good morning. This is Shanna C., grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater from Tennessee, due to God's grace and mercy. And that's it. When I think of that jaywalker, I think about that rush that comes. Like, when I'm standing next to a highway and these cars are coming and so you can feel that whoosh go by. That's for me when I am entirely abstinent, but for some reason and not fit spiritual condition, whatever the reason may be, there's that. That's how that mental obsession takes over. It's like this impulsive, I need to jump in. I need to see what I can get away with immediately. So I'm going to run across this road to see if I can get away with it because it's a rush to see, you know what, I can get away with this, and I forget. I forget the risk. I forget the pain that I went through before when I ate, you know, and then, oh, my God, the torture and the pain and the suffering, the memory of even a week or a month ago does not crowd in to deter. All I can think about is the rush of what can I get away with? And what is so tricky about this, at least for me anyway, is my mind will convince me that I had power to remember. Well, the problem is I forget to remember the pain and suffering of even a week or a month ago. I'm powerless over the fact that I forget. I need a power greater than me to be connected to me, to give me the sanity and the restoration and the renewal of my mind to help me remember that I am bodily and mentally different, and that obsession will come back, and I need this daily reprieve every day. I need power every single day. And I'm so grateful that power is available every single day upon awakening, throughout the day. And ultimately, at the end of the day, the only thing that's going to, and there's a part in the big book that says that the only thing that's probably going to stand between me and that first compulsive drink, bite, whatever, is the loving and powerful hand of God. What seemed to be the flimsy reed proves to be the loving and powerful hand of God. And I'm so grateful that I get to rely on that power greater than me, go with the flow, eat those abstinent meals, the food is down, and I get to help people in between and rely on God in between and grow in understanding and effectiveness. It has to be that way for me. Every second. And it's not a white-knuckling kind of burdensome thing anymore. And for that, I'm eternally grateful. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks, Tina.
Thanks so much, Janice C. from Tennessee. Next, we have Janice P.M., followed by Elizabeth D. Please share, Janice.
And thank you so much, Tina, for your service consistently. Yeah, my name is Janice P.M., and I'm a grateful, compulsive overeater living in Massachusetts. Well, if you're new and, you know, when I came to this jaywalker, I thought, oh no, what is this jaywalker has to do with me? I couldn't see any similarities. I thought that this was crazy. He was crazy. Well, as I learned and as I got spiritually fit from these 12 steps, I found out the similarities in this story and in my compulsive overeating. One, you know, he had this queer idea of fun, queer idea, his behavior, his mind, his thinking. He had fun when he was running in front of a car. Well, I had fun too when I was eating compulsively. Oh, yeah, I was on top of the world. I would think different. I would feel different, you know. And it says, my behavior, our behavior, I'll talk in the first tense, our behavior is absurd. Very absurd. Because, once I started, I couldn't stop. So due to... not to me eating as much as the previous thought. And this is the crux of the problem here with this jaywalker and myself as a compulsive overeater. It's not that first drink. It's that for that thought, that mental obsession. That's the crux of this problem with the jaywalker and myself. You know, when all these tragedies happen, where we see the progression of the disease, where he's, injured, and then he fractures his skull, and then it goes on to his arm and his legs, that's the progression. Once that thought started, I don't stop. I have the thought. I make a decision, whether it's excuses or whether I feel, that I deserve to or whatever, or I do it deliberately like Jim. No, it even when these tragedies happen, it's before the decision comes. So it's the thought, it's the decision, and then it's the action. And once the action starts, once I pick up, notice it's the thought before though. Once I pick up, I'm off to the races, you know, and he knows that, oh, geez, well, you know, I'm just having fun. It's not until he makes that decision to continue to get spiritually fit and he forgets that he's an alcoholic, or maybe he doesn't even know he's an alcoholic. And I was always curious, trying to test. Oh, no, I'm not really. But then I went on to the steps 4 through 12, and I found that I
gentle had reminder.
Thank you. I had to get out of my own self-reliance and turn to a power between my mind and my body. Starts with mind, and God is the only one that could take care of my mind and change it. Thank you very much, Tina, and everybody.
Thanks so much, Janice P.M. from Massachusetts. Next, we have Elizabeth D., followed by Vasa O. Please share, Elizabeth, and tell us where you're calling from.
Good morning. My name is Elizabeth D. I am a recovered compulsive overeater living in Massachusetts. I wasn't going to share today, but that lead share and the shares I've heard have really been powerful for me, and I just want to claim my seat and testify to the fact that I am the jaywalker and say that out loud as much to myself as to anyone else. I have exhibited in my life absurd and incomprehensible behavior with respect to my trigger foods, ingredients, and behaviors. It amazes me. I remember very distinctly, you know, I was obese for many, many years, and then I wasn't as a result of being on a food plan, and was living a wonderful life. And I remember so distinctly having been abstinent for a number of years, and then being someplace, having a meal with a boyfriend, and thinking that I could have something, I could ingest something that was there, a cup of coffee, which is, for me, just me, it's not true for everyone, coffee is a gateway drug for me. Just picking it up and having it, and feeling an incredible thrill, and that exhilaration. And, you know, I'm in a normal-sized body, and I'm a religious person. I go to church, but feeling that sense of thrill that is here, of skipping out in front of a fast-moving vehicle. Like, well, I can do this. Look, I'm having a cup of coffee. No problem. Well, within a matter of days, I was head and feet first back into my trigger foods, ingredients, and behaviors. And I was on the way up the scale, lickety-split. And, you know, I am, when it comes to these ingredients, I am not normal. And what I have learned over many years of being in this program, that the only solution for that weird sort of twist of mind that I have that tells me it's going to be different this time, the only solution is enlarging my spiritual life primarily through the working these steps. And, you know, by spiritual life, you know, that can mean so many different things for different people. And that's the beauty and perfection of this program, is that it doesn't ask you to, it asks you simply to be willing to believe that a power greater than yourself. You can call it whatever you want.
And it's a reminder.
Sanity. And sanity is what I'm going for today. Sanity and the enlargement of this beautiful life that I have. And I'm very grateful to have the opportunity to share, and I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Elizabeth D. from Massachusetts. Next, we have Vasa O., followed by Robin. Please share, Vasa.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Tina, for your service. And good morning, everyone. And I'm Vasa, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. I'm calling from Foxborough, Massachusetts. And I remember reading the story of the jaywalk. I said, this is crazy. What? Why would anybody want to do that? Step in front of the car and get the thrilled. I couldn't connect, but then, you know, hearing other people and myself going and, you know, going through my experience with the food addiction that I suffered for 25 years of my life before I came to Overeaters Anonymous. And the thrill that I used to get, the effects from the alcoholic foods, it was just unbelievable. And I remember hearing, you know, I didn't know anything about the program. I had no clues about food addiction. I remember reading in Dear Abby years and years before I found OA, and she said something about, she said, there is a problem. There is a program for food addiction, and it's called Overeaters Anonymous. And I didn't know, I kind of dismissed it. I wasn't obese at that time. I thought, well, I need to be really, really like 50 or 100 or 150 pounds overweight to belong in that program. But for me, it was progressive. For 25 years, experimenting all kinds of foods, counting, measuring, counting calories. And I learned in the Weight Watchers how to do that. I could have been a nutritionist. If I went back to school, if I went to school, I could have become nutritionist, but not knowing how to manage my food addiction without being in the 12 steps and understanding what food addiction was, and the allergy of the body, the obsession, the allergy of the body, the obsession of the mind, the mental twisted, and I had it all those things without even knowing. So here I come, and I was hurting myself, you know, with the food. And I tried to manage it all those years. Believe me, I tried it over and over and over. Nothing worked. And I'm so grateful to my higher power, to God that brought me to Overeaters Anonymous. That was, I learned what the problem was. There was a name for it, and that was like a miracle. Okay, there's a name for it now. I know what the problem is and what the solution. And I just threw myself, and I cut from the sugars. That was like, I cut it right away. It was torture. It was really torture. But anyways, one day at a time. Thank you. One time, one meal at a time, one day at a time. Working the steps, being in the program has given me a life I never imagined I would have today. Thank you, and I pass. Thank you, Tina.
Thanks so much, Vasa O from Massachusetts. And before we go on, let me remind everybody where we're reading from. If you've come on a little bit late, we're on page 37 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, the fourth paragraph, starting with Our Behavior is as Absurd and Incomprehensible. And then we'll have Robin followed by Anne. Please share, Robin.
Thanks so much, Tina. Hi, I'm Robin P. I'm a very grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater in Franklin, Tennessee. And I'm so grateful for all the shares. You know, it reminds me now that I was always trying to do this by myself and cross the street by myself, knowing that I had this addiction. And it's just now it feels like there are people, I just have to ask someone to hold my hand and cross the street. And I lived in New York City for a really long time, for about, you know, 20 years. And I jaywalked all the time there. And I also, I feel so, it's hard for me to share this because I had such a low bottom in bulimia. But, you know, it's really not fun, the bulimic part. And I would binge knowing that I was going to have to do that. And, you know, my nose would be bleeding. I didn't care. I just had to die thin. I mean, there was such consequences. And this is a disease of pretending and denial that there aren't any consequences. And there always are consequences. For me, there were. You know, to go 10 years without doing that behavior is literally a miracle from God. There's no other explanation. Because of myself, I tried over and over and over again that definition of insanity. And you know, I would pretend that there wouldn't be any consequences. I would pretend somehow that I wouldn't have to end up being bulimic when I was binging, but I always would. And just the hell of that, and the hell of finding a place to be bulimic if I was out somewhere, it took up all my time. It was literally, if you want to call it the devil or the disease or whatever you want to call it, I had no. It was like, take me to your leader. If I had a feeling come up, literally it came up. If I had anything that I just was running from, and food was my God, it's what I went to. And it never solved the problem. I ended up having two problems instead of one problem. And now I get to grow spiritually through things. It was just such an amazing feeling to actually put a feather in my cap when I grow through something. Oh, wow. I need to see that, and I feel like I enlarged my spiritual growth, and with God's help and the help of all of you. God bless everybody with a really blessed abstinent day, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Robin P. from Tennessee. Next, we have Ann M., followed by Ken W. H. Please share, Ann.
Good morning, everybody. This is Ann, A-N-N-E-M, listed in North Carolina, but currently in New Hampshire. I am a grateful, compulsive overeater living in recovery. And I wanted to share this morning because I'm just
I'm so grateful to this chapter, to Bill W. and the other writers, who give so many varied examples of the absurdity, the incomprehensibility of our disease. And the the individuals that are talked about in this chapter that we've already discussed, but this jaywalker and going to this kind of extreme example absolutely gets my attention. And as I've heard the other shares this morning, it gets our attention because it is wild. And initially, at the very first reading, many of us did not identify with the jaywalker. It is only as we get to understand the disease of addiction more that we truly understand how somebody can choose the rush even when we know the high, high risk. And that's the most absurd thing, is when I make the first choice for the first compulsive bite. And I guess the other image that I would add to this morning's conversation is that I kind of think of the God of my understanding sometimes being the walk, don't walk sign. And when I am in fit spiritual condition, then I do take time to walk all the way to the crosswalk. I take time to look at the walk, don't walk sign. And I pause. I use the God of my understanding to give me the signal that, yes, this is safe. This is safe food. This is safe behavior. This is a safe conditions under which to eat, because all of those things are part of my addiction. It's certainly individual foods that I call my alcoholic foods, but it's also conditions and behaviors around eating that I have to pay attention to. So I always have to look for the walk, don't walk sign given by the God of my understanding. With that, I pass and share my time. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Ann M. from North Carolina. Next, we have Ken W.H., followed by Heather K. Please share, Ken.
Thanks, Tina. This is Ken W.H., excuse me, recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. This story of the jaywalker just tells me really one thing. It seems pretty central to this paragraph and the next one, that it's all about progression and showing the progression, and that in spite of the progression, he's out running in front of things. Well, in spite of my progression with food, I just kept progressing. I did exactly what it said it was going to do for me. It got worse and worse, and I didn't care. I had the compulsive overeating brain, the alcoholic mind, and there was nothing I could do on my own to stop that. What I find interesting about this jaywalker is that he started out skipping in front of cars or whatever, just skipping. This is fun. Spoiler alert, the next paragraph is going to have him racing in front of. That's all that the power of compulsion in me was, that early on I'd have one and maybe two, and that'd be enough until the next time that it became three and then 10 and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And there's no mention of a spiritual life in this paragraph. And there's no way to assume that he had one, that this jaywalker had one. So there wasn't even a spiritual life to enlarge. His issue was purely, and it was mine early, that I had the brain. I had the brain. I also had the allergy. I also had there's no question, certain foods set me off. like other addictions that I've experienced, that the adrenaline rush is just extraordinary. And there's no way to stop that. That's except abstinence. And we have no indication that this guy was ever abstinent, other than that he was laid up in a hospital bed. I was never abstinent until I got here 6 years ago. And I've been around OA since the 80s, and just never abstinent, never stopped. So I'm just grateful that I have. It's good news. There is good news. And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Ken W.H. from North Carolina. Next, we have Heather K., followed by Nick F. Please share with us, Heather.
Yes. Hi, my name is Heather K. I am from Pennsylvania. And despite the fact that I often share in other OA meetings and do a lot of public speaking, I'm nervous to share here. This is my first time in Vision for You, which I found about 2.5 weeks ago. And I like this. Well, I'm walking slowly through the big book with a sponsor, which I've never done before, in a sort of collective 4 years of OA over a 15-year period. And I am always resistant. I'm always parsing the language and trying to figure out how I'm different, not the same. But I'm learning to associate. And this jaywalking analogy for me is really helpful in the idea that, like, I can go days, weeks, months, years jaywalking and not get hit. And that's the biggest struggle with this food problem, is like, then I get this false confidence. But the risk is always there, and the risk is so severe that it isn't worth the thrill. My experience has been that sometimes, maybe more often than not, I can dart through traffic and avoid tragedy, but the tragedy is so huge when it hits. And the thrill, I'm praying that I am growing in the knowledge that the thrill isn't worth it. Last week, during a meeting with my sponsor, she said something about the promise of neutrality. And my, not the promise, but like the joy of neutrality, the beauty of neutrality. And my body just like didn't want that. I rebelled against that idea that I would have food neutrality, this thing that people speak so much of. And I think as we read, and I sort of tried to parse out what was that reaction about, and I realized it's like the grieving, the loss of the thrill. Like, as great as neutrality sounds, there's an absence of thrill and neutrality, right? But, you know, I also thought about the progression as we read about the jaywalker, and like the idea that the jaywalker might start jaywalking on a country road, and that's a little extra food for me. And then they jaywalk in town, and that's a natural version of a food. You know, it doesn't have all of the ingredients that combine to kill me, but it still triggers that same thing. And then jaywalking in a city might be eating between meals. And then suddenly I'm all in and I'm jaywalking on a highway and I'm guaranteed to have my legs cut off, you know, broken or whatever. And the thing about this is like, I still have to cross streets, you know, in recovery. Thank you. But I have to follow good orderly direction when I do that. So thanks for letting me share. I pass.
Thanks so much, Heather K. from Pennsylvania. Next, we have Nick F., and then we'll take a couple more names. Please share with us, Nick.
This is Nick F. in Tennessee. Can I be heard?
Yes, we can hear you.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Tina. Thank you for your service. Yeah, I'm Nick. I'm a compulsive overeater. I reside in Tennessee. This paragraph is so powerful in light of what I felt I needed to share. Talking about fun, you know, I've been abstinent a little over 100 days now again. And, you know, I missed this meeting for 2 days. And my idea of, you know, I'm abstinent, I get to have fun, you know, my body feels great, I have a lot of energy. And I stayed up really late, 2 nights in a row. But this is my medicine. This is my fuel. I'm not having fun if it's going to come between me and my obligation to be here, to sit and to listen and to get to share every now and then. You know, and it's absurd that I would do anything that would get in the way of this meeting, which, you know, where my sponsor resides, which is where I get to work the steps and where I get to hear the depth and weight that's needed to recover my soul. This is my medicine. This is my fuel. You know, on December 27th, I was in a meeting, parked in a parking lot, eating enough food for a family. And I couldn't share in that meeting because my camera wasn't on. And I was just eating and binging, aware of what I was doing because I'd been abstinent. I'd been recovered before. I'd given 350 pounds away before. I had restored, you know, I was restored to sanity before. And, you know, but yet I found myself back with my new body, you know, back where I was, worse than where I was. I gained over 115 pounds back in 2025. Nothing needs to come between this. And I like to say, you know, whether I bring my bones or my belly, it's the pain in my brain when I get here of why I have become so consistent, why, you know, on that same night, December 27th, I dropped to my knees and I said, I'll get to this meeting every day. I'll get to my Saturday meeting every day. I need, you know, every Saturday, I need to be here. I need to be surrendered. I need to work these steps. It's incomprehensible and absurd, you know, and the friendly warning is the fact that I can hear my high power say, baby, it's okay. I got you. Log on today. You know, I don't need to go months and years and weeks without getting here. Somebody said this is a search and rescue. Well, here's where the party is for me. Any other party that I think I'm about to attend, I'm just going to have to put that on the side. And, you know, I'm asking God, I have my son. He's homebound. It's not even safe for him to go to school with other kids right now. I've got some priorities that I get to do with my recovered mind, so I need to give my ideas of fun to my high power. And so with that, I pass. Thank y'all for being here.
As a reminder.
Saved my life.
Oh, thanks so much, Nick F. Thank you. Thanks, Nick F. from Tennessee. We have time for about two more shares. Who would like to share?
Priscilla A.
Tenzin P.
I got
DC.
I got Priscilla and Tenzin. Please share, Priscilla.
Thank you so much, Priscilla H. Grateful to be recovering in New Jersey. I am the jaywalker. Oh, my goodness. The first few dozen times I heard this story, I thought, how ridiculous. But eventually, it came to me that I am the jaywalker. I did not run out in the street thrill like the jaywalker did. I ran out in the street to rescue somebody or something. Maybe a scarf or a little mitten that some child had dropped in the street. Let me run out there and grab it before it gets run over. Maybe even a kitten or a puppy that had wandered out into the street. I was always about rescuing somebody else. And what I didn't realize was that I was the one who needed to be rescued. And then COVID came along, and my Girl Scout, I think of her as a Girl Scout because Scouts used to be known for helping little old ladies across the street. My Girl Scout came along, and she gave me the phone number for the vision meeting. When my face-to-face meeting and most face-to-face meetings shut down, I began coming to vision, to this vision meeting. And what I discovered through this vision meeting was that it's not about, it's about food, but it's not about food for us. It's about alcohol, but it's not about alcohol for the original writers of the book. What it is about relationships. My relationship with my higher power that I choose to call God or my BFF, my best friend forever. It's about my relationship with myself and with you, my fellow travelers. And that's what recovery is about, in my opinion, at this point in time. It's about relationships. It's about the food as well, and I need help today with that from my higher power. So thanks for letting me share, and with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Priscilla H. from New Jersey. Next, we have Tenzin, and then we might have time for one more share. Please share, Tenzin.
All right. Thank you very much, and good morning, everyone. Tenzin P. checking in from New York. I so appreciate the shares. To me, it's like facets of a diamond to hear these shares about this one paragraph. I learned so much from every one of you. So a powerful paragraph for me, too. And, you know, the example that comes to mind first about something that I did in my active addiction. So I was living in, this is many years ago, I was also living in New York City, and I would go to stay with some boyfriend or other in a dangerous neighborhood. And in the middle of the night, I would walk out to some convenience store to buy food. And it didn't matter to me that it was a dangerous neighborhood. I had one thing in mind. So I'm also the jaywalker. And the thing also about this paragraph that stands out this time has to do with thrill. So when I think about how thrill is for me, there's fear underneath a thrill. You know, even when I think about going out into traffic like that, that's what the thrill is. So I learned, you know, with the help of recovery, a really different way to work with whatever fears I have, whatever might be underneath these behaviors. And I also learned, like reading this, I have compassion at this point, and I want to distinguish in the tradition I study in, compassion is different than empathy. Of course, empathy, I feel sadness and identification and feelings about what this jaywalker was doing and what I did in my addiction. But compassion, as opposed to just empathy, compassion has a level of taking action in it too. I make a decision and then I act on it. And in this case, it's about, you know, working the steps and developing a view of reality that is bigger than me. And all of that helps me with having a different view that allows me to know my feelings, whatever difficult ones they might be, and to also have compassion and to take action. And I think with that, I'll pass. I'm so grateful to be in recovery and on this meeting. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tenzin P. from New York. We have about 2 minutes. Who wants it?
Kathy,
I'll take it, Sally.
I hear nothing.
Kathy R.
Kathy R. Let's go, Kathy. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Good morning, everybody. Great shares. Great meeting. I just want to claim my seat today. I was thinking about the excitement that the jaywalker probably felt before he left his house. And I can so relate to that, you know, the excitement of going and buying my binge foods and just, you know, shutting myself up for the weekend. And I remember specifically doing that one weekend when I dropped my little dog off for surgery, emergency surgery for IBDD, which is disc disease and dachshunds, labeled the bread and butter of veterinarians. And I just remember, you know, I just don't want to feel anything this weekend. I can't wait to get to the store. And I can just so identify with the jaywalker. And for years, I didn't know what the heck this story meant. But I appreciate everybody's shares in being here today. Thank you. I pass.
Thanks so much, Kathy. Where are you calling from?
Massachusetts.
All right. Thank you, Kathy. All right. So let's see. Thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour study immediately following closing. The share ID for today, which is Thursday, May the 14th, 2026, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting is 23,460. That's 23460. And we will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And more, Z is going to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Maura, please read.
Thank you, Tina, for your service. This is Maura, gratefully recovered compulsive overeater in Virginia. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the record of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.